This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome. This is Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. And in studio today, I have David Donaldson, the CEO of the Atlanta Healing Center. We've got a couple of interesting topics to discuss today, so thank you for being here, David.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Before we get too far into our story today, I do want to remind folks about the National Take Back Day, which will be held April 26, 2014. Now, we've talked about this several times in the past. This is an opportunity for you to clean out your medicine cabinets, to check around your kitchen or wherever you keep your medications, and make sure that old expired medications or medications that you're no longer using have been properly destroyed. It's a serious public health and safety issue. When research has been done looking at where most young people, ages 12 to 25, get their source of prescription drugs or other medications that they take, it's not the drug dealer that's standing at the corner of the schoolyard. It's not some stranger. Actually, 54% of them say that they get their drugs for free from a family member or friend. Now, I'm sure that there are cases where a family member is saying, here, take some of my OxyContin, but I would dare bet the majority of the time the medication is being, let's say, borrowed without the owner's permission and used recreationally. This is often becoming the first drug of entry for a number of our patients. Now about 25% of 12 to 18-year-olds are saying that their first drug use is now prescription drugs. It used to be overwhelmingly that we would see their first drug of initiation would be alcohol, tobacco, or marijuana. And those still are maintaining their own in terms of percentages. But when we look at this startling number, this many young people are actually taking prescription drugs as their first recreational drug, it's quite frightening. The kids will say things like, well, it's prescription. I can look it up on the internet. I know what dose and what kind of medication it is. My grandmother takes it. My mom takes it. So they have this sense that it is safe and it is much preferable to other illicit substances and don't realize the danger of it. So the idea that your own medicine cabinet at home may be the source of recreational drugs, not just for your children or your family members, but for other people in the neighborhood, I think leads us to want to really make sure that we are not contributing to this drug problem. Now, kids are sometimes quite smart and seek particular types of drugs, but at the farm parties or when they go farming, and that's PH, not F, when kids today are talking about farming, they are talking about going through and taking one or two pills out of every bottle in the medicine cabinet. So that might be their mother's estrogen tablets. It might be leftover antibiotics. It might be somebody's asthma medicine. It's not just the specific prescription drugs that we're worried about. However, these substances can also be quite dangerous for people to be taking and not something that we want to leave available. Unfortunately, when the Controlled Substance Act was written, the language in it made it impossible for patients to take their medications back to a pharmacy. If I get a prescription and my doctor changes the dose or I have an adverse reaction, I can't just pick up that bottle and take it back to the pharmacy. That is actually against the law. You can't really take it to your doctor's office either. So the only way for people to safely dispose of their prescription drugs has been to flush them down the toilet or throw them out in the trash. We're now seeing contamination in water supplies in large metropolitan areas, and we also know that sometimes these medications and drugs are actually recovered from the trash for purposes of abuse and distribution. So in 2010, the DEA launched its first take-back drug event, and Congress passed a Secure and Responsible Drug Disposal Act of 2010, which allows people to take their medications to an area that is being manned by DEA agents, their local FBI agents, or other criminal justice folks who will help to make sure that the medication is disposed of. Burning it is really how most of the time it is disposed of. So if you have an opportunity, you can go to the DEA website or just put in your search engine National Take Back Day, and you will be given the name of local sheriff's office, fire stations, various and sundry other state and local locations that you can return these medications for proper disposal. Now, when we think about the safe protection of our medication, there's a number of other things you need to consider. And Dr. Eric Collins, who's a psychiatrist from New York, he wrote an interesting article talking about the things that you can do to make sure that teenagers and others don't get access to your medications. The first thing is to keep a regularly updated written inventory of all prescription and over-the-counter medications in your home. Kids are really counting on the fact that you're not going to count every single pill and notice when one or two or five or ten are missing. So make sure that you are keeping track of that. You may also want to keep track of medication that comes to you from the pharmacy. There are certainly cases in which there has been a mistake from the pharmacy where too few, generally it's too few, it's rarely too many pills are in your pill bottle when you get home. But just make sure that the proper amount of pills are in the bottle. Also now written on the label of prescriptions is a description of the pill. It will say this is a round white tablet with the initials AHC on one side and the number 935 on the other side. So your pill should look like that. If it doesn't, then you also need to be sure that you've taken that back. Also, make sure that you safeguard all of your medications. If possible, keep them locked up. Make sure that other people in your sphere where your children or your grandchildren may have access understand the need to lock up their medications. Properly dispose of unused and expired meds. If you have a bunch and you can't make it to the take back day, one of the ways in which it's suggested that you dispose of them is to find some used coffee grounds or used kitty litter. Crush the pills, put them in the used kitty litter in a garbage bag or the used coffee grounds, and then add a little bit of water so that it becomes this very unappetizing slurry, and the medications, the pills themselves, cannot be retrieved. Don't flush them down the toilet. Don't put them down the sink because of the environmental harm. And make sure that you are encouraging others to take back their medications and properly dispose of them. So that, again, the National Take Back Day is April 26th, and I encourage all of you to get involved and clean out your cupboards. It's spring cleaning. I just got back from the American Society of Addiction Medicine annual medical scientific conference. This year it was in Orlando. And I have to say that the topic at the top of the list was marijuana. Marijuana, both medical marijuana, decriminalization of marijuana, or legalization of marijuana. A big, big topic. And I know we've talked about it before, but I think that this week in particular, it's a very appropriate topic, given that this is a special week.
Well, for people who are marijuana smokers,
right,
pot smokers across the world, what has become known as 420, as a symbolic time of the day for smoking and a symbolic date on the calendar for smoking, a day in some states where they actually have 420 parties and rallies to get together and hopefully legalize is what they're pushing for with marijuana, happens to also be the same day as Easter this year. So there's a lot of jokes going around about
the Easter bunny, what you're going to find in your basket.
Those sort of things. Yeah, absolutely. So we figured we better just come on back to this subject once again. Part of what's really linking these two subjects for me is an article I read where they are now having vending machines for getting marijuana in Colorado, dispensing machines for marijuana that the manufacturer says is able to verify a person's age. And as you were talking in the initial segment about take back your drugs and how people younger and younger are getting exposed to those to opiates and pills. In every assessment I do, part of what we talk about is how old were you when you were first exposed, and generally at about age 12, they would have the first exposure to nicotine,
right?
And then at about age 14, they would have their first exposure to alcohol and marijuana, and generally those are right about the same time. And for the people of my generation and before, that 12-year-old first exposure to nicotine was at a cigarette vending machine.
Right.
I can remember my very first pack of cigarettes. It was like 75 cents. And we were at a hotel, and there was this vending machine. And it was like this, you know, magnet, like a candy machine that you had to go get this out of it. And the whole, you know, allure of putting that in there and getting this pack of cigarettes and sneaking around the corner and lighting up and having that sense of I'm doing, getting away with something and I'm being bad and I'm feeling grown up. And now we're using that same technology, moving it to marijuana.
Marijuana.
That's just unbelievable.
It is, and the irony of now marijuana is available in edible form, brownies, cookies, pot tarts, other kinds of edibles will be in these vending machines. And one of the doctors that I was speaking with in Orlando last week is head of the toxicology unit at Children's Hospital in Denver, talking about the toxic overdoses that young people are showing up to the emergency room. It's increased over 300%. Young children having been exposed to edibles. They're not smoking the marijuana, but they're eating the marijuana brownies, and they are becoming toxic and having to be hospitalized in the intensive care unit. So this is scary on so many levels. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about more things regarding marijuana.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction. I have with me David Donaldson from the Atlanta Healing Center, and we're talking about marijuana vending machines. During the break, we had a brief discussion looking at what are the toxic reasons that young people might be admitted to the emergency room or to the hospital because of ingesting marijuana brownies.
Yeah, it was so interesting to hear you say that was part of the big thing down at the ASAM conference, because people in general don't think of toxicity when they think about marijuana.
Right. They think, oh, this is a simple little thing, and it's not a big deal. But when you look at the effects of marijuana, the way in which it can become toxic for someone is related to the fact that it lowers heart rate. Now, we know that with some drugs, when you ingest them, things like stimulants, cocaine, methamphetamine, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure. But when we look at things like coming off of alcohol or benzodiazepines, you get increased heart rate, increased blood pressure. But with marijuana, the toxicity is related to this slowing down of the heart rate. And when kids have ingested a large amount of marijuana, then they have the slowing of the heart rate that causes them to have a lot of difficulty with actually remaining alert, conscious. Exactly. Thank you.
I'm thinking if your heart rate is slowed down, then you're not getting as much blood to your brain, and
right.
So you're likely to pass out. You're likely to feel very, very weak.
Exactly.
No blood to your arms, your limbs, so you're going to feel like you just can't do anything, which I guess you wouldn't be able to do anything.
Right. You're just, you're really having significant difficulty remaining conscious. And it is not something that we've seen a lot of until these recent medical marijuana and looking at these edibles. Now, as more of the medical marijuana is in the form of baked goods, sweet treats that people take orally, this is much more attractive to children. I mean, they will smoke whatever they can smoke, and heaven knows all of us have pulled weeds out of the ground and tried to smoke them when we were kids, but the idea that these are really good, and they're manufactured to be good, and they're in bright, colorful, attractive wrappings and packaging, they're very attractive to these kids, and it is becoming a problem and really a public health issue. And this doctor was extremely concerned about what's happening to these little kids.
So there really just is not a way to regulate how much somebody would be ingesting in that form. You know, if it's a kid who's just taking, like, they're eating M&Ms or something,
right,
one after another, and not really knowing how much THC they're getting in their system, as opposed to if you're smoking a joint or if you're take ingesting it by smoking,
right?
That you know pretty much how much you're taking in, and it's going to go in and leave your system. But when you're, you know, if you have this plate full of brownies that look amazing, and you're
right.
just kind of putting one after the other because you have a chocolate rush going with a THC rush, I can easily see how somebody could do that.
And the difficulty is with the edibles that they can take an hour or two before they've been digested and before the person actually has a psychoactive experience from it. So the kid can eat a brownie and feel fine and eat another brownie and feel fine and a couple of hours later be not feeling quite so fine, and that's what happens. Some adults have had trouble gauging their dose of the edibles as well because of this continued issue related to, I don't know how much I've had, I don't know whether I've taken enough, mm-hmm. and I'm not feeling anything, so I'm just going to have a little bit more. Where when you're smoking it, you get the effect pretty quickly and people may do a little bit too much, but it's much more unlikely to overdose or to become toxic smoking because the effect is so much more readily available than it is when you eat it and it just builds up into your system without you really recognizing it. There was an interesting poll done by the Pew Research Center recently here in on the 9th of April. It was released looking at opinions around marijuana and the idea that in 1969, 84% of the public that was surveyed said that pot should be illegal. And only 12% in 1969 thought that pot was okay. Then 4 years ago, in 2010, 52% of the respondents thought that marijuana should not be legal. And only 42% said it should be made legal. This new poll that was just completed is a complete reversal. Now, 54% of people said it should be legalized. So we've gone from 12% in 1969 thought it should be legal to 41% in 2010 to now 54%. The majority of the population don't really understand why this is a problem. And the attitudes, I think, that we're seeing with the marketing and the push towards medical marijuana and legalization of marijuana has really led us to this place where people just don't see what's the big deal and what's the big problem. We know, however, there is a big deal and it is a big problem, and it becomes a huge problem for our patients that really struggle with coming off of marijuana.
The reality that for people who have marijuana addiction, it slowly steals their dreams and slowly steals their life and end up unable to motivate themselves to, let alone get out of their parents' basement, but to think about actually having a job or being responsible for their life. And it's such a subtle process that's happening that people just discount it. They'll blame it on something else.
Right.
They'll blame it on anxiety. They'll blame it on mean teachers at school. They'll blame it on too much stress and discount the one thing that's taking away the person's ability to respond to stress. I can't tell you how often I'll be talking to parents and they'll say, well, it was just pot. I wasn't concerned at all. And in reality, pot is so much more than a gateway drug. It is for a marijuana addict. And I think that's what's so crucial in the conversation, because it has the same percentage of addictive potential as alcohol, and the impact on a person's ability to have a future is just massive.
And I think that that is a problem because this is a childhood addiction. We don't see many children using methamphetamine. We don't see many children using cocaine. We don't see many children using heroin. We see lots of children using pot. And it is an interesting substance. And we've talked about the four chameleon drugs, I like to call them, because it doesn't matter if you're leaning towards I really like downers or I really like stimulants. These four substances will be whatever you want them to be. And people who are addicted to pain relievers or who are addicted to methamphetamine, they like a certain buzz. These particular substances, and they are nicotine, they are marijuana, they are alcohol, and heroin. Those four substances will be whatever you want them to be, and they are incredibly powerfully addictive. And if it's not your drug of choice, it will impair your judgment enough to go back to your drug of choice. So many of our patients will say, well, pot's not really my thing, so it's really okay if I – it's not a risk for me to use pot. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it really is a risk for you to use pot. Not that that's the thing that you're so attracted to, but because it will light up the part of your brain that you really like lit up.
And it will keep you connected to the people who are going to supply that part of your brain with the substance that you really are trying to get away from. The number of people who mm-hmm. are in treatment for heroin addiction and know that they're in a life and death battle with heroin, that will discount the impact of marijuana, and they will go right to the same dealer to buy their marijuana and not even know that they're in danger.
Right.
And they'll have no idea why they relapsed on heroin, even though they went right into the lion's den. The other part that strikes me is, you know, once upon a time, people would kind of talk about I had a sip of my dad's beer.
Right.
You know, and that was just the kind of thing you had at a picnic, that little kids tasted daddy's beer and it was no big deal. Nowadays, we will have people who talk about getting high with their parents.
Right.
And the impact is viewed that same way. But the impact on a child's brain is so much different. But we know that the impact on first exposure for an adult brain versus a child brain with marijuana is night and day different.
Absolutely. And the difference is in the way in which marijuana stays in the system. Because it is fat soluble, and because, yes, your brain is made up about 70% of fat, when people call you a fathead, they're really being quite complimentary, because that is exactly what we're seeing, is that the marijuana attaches to the fat molecules and is stored and is then leached out over time, so that you may be having continued low levels of effect even though you're not actually smoking today. Alcohol doesn't do that. Heroin doesn't do that. Other substances don't stay in your system to the same degree that we see with marijuana. And it's right up there in your brain doing what it does. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about marijuana and other issues in the news. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle, medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction, and you just caught me with a lifesaver in my mouth. Today we're talking about some issues related to marijuana, and it was such a big topic. There were a number of workshops, and the plenary address at ASAM was really about how this is going to impact the field of addiction medicine and how this is going to affect our society in general. And the idea that young people are having this access and that nobody's as worried as I think they should be, because not only is marijuana, as we were talking about before the break, a fat-soluble molecule, but when children's brains are exposed to a chemical that hangs around for a long time, it can actually rewire the brain and change the way the brain grows and develops, resulting in the possibility that this brain may not operate normally outside of the influence of marijuana. So the idea that this is a childhood drug and that this is something that is becoming increasingly available, the studies are showing very clearly that kids that are in states where there is medical marijuana are significantly more likely to be using marijuana and significantly more likely to be showing up for treatment for marijuana addiction. They are getting a very potent form of marijuana, which creates in and of itself a number of problems. And this recent study talking about how people smoke pot can really tell us a lot about their risk for addiction. People will often say, well, I use a better grade of pot so I don't have to smoke so much, and so I'm not really exposing myself. That doesn't hold true.
Right. What the study really looked at was how people would ingest it, and it was looking having people show up to the study site and prepare their means of ingesting and whatever was their favorite way of doing it, and so looking at how much they would self-administer and how they would consume it, and what they were finding was that the people, it wasn't necessarily the potency so much as the getting it in there. The ones that were sitting there and just taking toke after toke after toke were much more apt to, in the follow-up study, mm-hmm. meet the criteria for addiction than the ones who just kind of took a little puff and held it for a while and passed it along. So it was looking at how there's something in these people that's, wanting to get one's good and a dozen is even better, holding true even with marijuana.
Yeah, we see that with alcohol, with the pre-gaming, the folks that will have four or five shots or drink a number of drinks in rapid succession before they go to the party so that they get their buzz on mm-hmm. more quickly. We see this with the way some people smoke cigarettes.
Right, right.
In terms of the way you smoke it, will determine how it's actually affecting your brain, whether it's stimulating you or whether it's calming you down, because nicotine can go either way. So these folks that are really working very hard to get their blood level and their brain exposure of marijuana up really fast are the ones that you need to be looking at, the Hoovers.
The Hoovers. We look at the tolerance level, and a lot of times this particular area of the subject gets discounted because they'll say, well, I just had one joint, and they had that one joint in two puffs,
right?
As opposed to someone else who had maybe two puffs off of a joint and they still had that same joint 5 hours later. Because that addicted person needs to get that tolerance level up there, and the faster the better.
We talk about the 80-20 rule in medicine all the time, that 20% of the population consumes 80% of the available medical care. The 80-20 rule also applies to marijuana smokers, that 20% consume 80% of the available marijuana at any given party. There are those that are just passing the joint, sharing the joint to be part of a social experience, and then there are those 20% that are really working hard to get their buzz on quick, hard, and heavy, and can tolerate quite a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So, One of the other things that we talked about is looking at the myths around marijuana. And interestingly, it's been projected that the recreational marijuana is going to bring in tremendous amounts of tax revenue to Colorado and to Washington, and has been the impetus for a lot of states to follow what happens with recreational marijuana. Is this going to be a money maker for the state by this kind of legalization? Interestingly, they were predicting that there were going to be as high as $13 million collected in the first quarter. And unfortunately, there's only been about $2 million. So the amount of taxes that have actually been collected, not looking at the same level. So
that was in Colorado.
That was in Colorado.
The first quarter of legal marijuana in Colorado.
Right. Looking at how much tax revenue was actually generated, it was significantly less than expected. Part of that may be the difficulty that they're going to have with now policing this, particularly if the marijuana marketplace, folks are not allowed to use federally insured banks to deposit their money, and because it's still illegal federally.
Oh, my gosh.
So the marijuana dispensaries, both for medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, they're a cash business. And unfortunately, they are not able to take credit cards or checks, and they're not able to make deposits into federally insured banks. Now, if there's local banks that aren't federally insured, I guess they can do that. So tracking the money is going to be significantly more difficult for the state than I think they originally thought about. And this idea that here in one place is a lot of money and a lot of drugs, I have to think is going to raise the potential risk for these places in terms of somebody coming to rob them. We already know pharmacies, there are robbery attempts on pharmacies relatively not infrequently. And again, that's a combination of drugs and money that can be quite attractive to folks. Mm-hmm. The number of vendors has gone up significantly. Medical marijuana in Colorado was passed in 2001. In 2005, they legalized it in the city of Denver. In 2008, there was one store that provided the medical marijuana. In 2009, there are now 700 licensed stores for medical marijuana. And since then, the number of stores that have opened since the beginning of the year to sell the recreational marijuana, they don't even have a count on that. Many, many, many outlets are being opened on a very regular basis. The patrolling and policing and regulation of these is going to be become quite expensive, especially if the cash revenue is not nearly what they had expected it to be.
And they don't have the power of the federal government to go in there and make sure that the money's going the direction it's supposed to go.
Right. So this is going to be a local burden of enforcement, making sure that they're selling it appropriately, not to underage people, that the revenues are being adequately monitored and accounted for, and that the distribution of taxes owed also is regulated and accounted for. Could be some an interesting year for Colorado, and hopefully one that people in other states will look at a little bit more cautiously. Though the Obama administration and Eric Holder, the Attorney General, is trying to see if there aren't some ways to make this less onerous for the states, I think there's still some significant concerns about what this is going to do. And I have to think some of this has not been really well thought through.
I have to imagine also, though, that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is sitting back there just drooling and waiting for their opportunity to jump in the game. And we're opening the doors.
We are opening the doors. The other interesting thing was a talk that was given by the executive director of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. His name is Kevin Sabet. He's a PhD, and he was following the money, looking at how much money has been invested in the legalization of marijuana, how many millions of dollars spent. And I wish I had a really good picture of this. I wish I could see it better. But George Soraris, I hope I said that right, funds the Drug Policy Alliance and instructed them back in 1990 to begin working on the legalization. So far in 2011, they anticipate that over $100 million has been spent in efforts in the United States to get marijuana legalized. So a lot of money, a lot of influence has been put forward into having marijuana legalized. Interesting, the U.S. Postal Service is now having a lot more difficulty and having to monitor very closely packages that are being sent out of Colorado, Washington State, other states that have medical marijuana because of the number of incidents that they're finding marijuana being shipped out of state. In 2013, in January through May, they found over 209 packages coming out of Colorado that contained marijuana. So who knows how many more went through without
being checked.
Without being checked. And this is really frightening to me. One of the things that Smart Approaches to Marijuana, or the SAM organization that's chaired by Patrick Kennedy, one of the things they were really concerned about is the role of big tobacco in potentially funding and becoming very involved in what they're calling big marijuana. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this and other things related to marijuana. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction. David Donaldson is with me today, and we're talking about marijuana and its impact, at least that I was feeling at the American Society of Addiction Medicine. Lots and lots of talk, some controversy, some discussion around what is happening, and part of it is all of the money that has gone into the campaigns, particularly around medical marijuana, that we're looking at this as an herbal preparation that is natural. Can't tell you how many times I've heard that. Cocaine is natural. Heroin is natural. You know, let's digitalis is natural.
Alcohol
is natural. So the idea that this is going to be the salvation for all of these people who are suffering puts this different slant on it and begins to make people less concerned and more accepting, resulting in states all around us here in Georgia who have just passed legislation regarding medical marijuana now being available, and Georgia looking like our governor might sign something anyway very shortly.
Yeah, it's been really interesting watching how big the push in Georgia was to get it legalized for the children that have the seizure disorders, and putting the emphasis on these poor children with the seizure disorders, and wanting to usurp the already established method of getting medications approved, going through the FDA's regular pathway towards getting medications legalized, and pushing for routes of administration that other than the one benefit of apparently helping seizure disorders, is incredibly bad for a person. And as soon as it didn't pass at the midnight hour in Georgia, the governor's coming out with saying, we're going to find a way to make this work. It has to point somebody towards looking at what's the other information behind this.
And where's the money coming from to make this happen? Who's really going to benefit from this? And maybe there might be some people who will benefit because they have medical conditions. But the real winner is this is the toe in the door. This is the smoke and mirrors that gets people riled up, emotionally involved, and then you accept a little bit, and you accept a little bit, and you accept a little bit more, and the next thing you know, the stove's been turned up, and you're in a pot of boiling water.
With a vending machine for marijuana.
right next door. So ASAM is not opposed, of course, to the idea that we can do research to look at, are there possible medicinal components, but the research needs to be done, and we do have a methodology in this country for deciding what medication is appropriate, what's the risk, the benefits, the side effects, the appropriate dosing, and the indication. And we have a delivery system in the form of pharmacies with trained professionals who have very strict government, state, and local oversight to make sure that what they're doing is appropriate. And we have doctors who are intervening to say, yes, I've examined this patient. I didn't see them over the internet. I didn't see a form that they filled out, and now I'm giving them a recommendation for a medical marijuana card, but there's a real doctor-patient relationship. This is the way we practice medicine. There's nothing to say now that states couldn't say, well, we really like our homegrown methamphetamine, and we want the federal government to stay out of our way, and we want to be able to legalize that. That's an extreme case, but it kind of points out how ridiculous it is that a state can say, we're not going to pay attention to the federal government, we're not going to pay attention to the medical community, we're not going to pay attention to the FDA, the DEA, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. We're going to decide for ourselves that anecdotally these things are helpful, and we're going to let people be exposed to them. It makes my head a little bit crazy, as you can tell. Just a little bit crazy.
So you were mentioning even within the addiction field that there are people who are going ahead and deciding, okay, if this is going to bring money towards paying for treatment, then we're going to be okay with making this legal. And, you know, in Vegas, when they were putting this emphasis in gambling, they mm-hmm. also put money towards treatment for gambling. They put money towards making sure the children of people who lost everything with gambling didn't also. So I guess there is a sense of society planning for the problems, but there's also a selling your soul out on all of this.
Fortune magazine had an article called "The Yale MBAs Are Here." And this Prohibition Brands is the name of a group looking to mass produce and mass market marijuana cigarettes and cigars. And their vision is to become the marijuana version of the Marlboro cigarette. A 29-year-old California man has raised $10 million from investors to invest in these marijuana-related companies. And they're working first on changing legislation. Somebody's got to be the Anheuser-Busch of a marijuana, Hartfield was quoted as saying. A number of legitimate big business people are saying this is a great investment. You should be putting your money there. And they're spending millions of dollars on lobbying efforts to make sure that every state in the union has access to medical marijuana, if not access to legalized recreational marijuana.
So on the one hand, we have the government coming against big tobacco and,
right.
and making them take off the labeling and making them put scary pictures on the labels and making all the packages look the same so you can't get brand hooked on any particular type of tobacco. And we're going to create all of these wonderful Marlboro-style marijuana. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And who knows? We may see the next car race with marijuana companies, and I can see the Stanley Brothers on top of a formula car or the baseball games. You know, it's becoming scary to me that this is going to become so mainstream that we're going to be seeing more and more young people at risk. And now even greater and easier access to high-quality, high-THC content marijuana. It's really kind of scary to me, very scary. Colorado is having some issues in terms of drug-free workplace. because the federal government has very clearly said that businesses have a right to require their employees to be drug-free, and many companies are able to get reduced insurance benefits by being a drug-free workplace, which includes not only pre-employment drug testing, but random drug testing to ensure that employees are in compliance. Well, in Colorado now, we have not only medical marijuana, but we have recreational marijuana, and people are arguing that they shouldn't be penalized for having a positive drug test. And, of course, we know the problem with marijuana and drug testing, which is that
once it's in your system, it takes time to come out of your system, and it can be positive for 30 days after smoking.
And so they can't prove
whether it's current use or not.
Right. And they can't prove whether they're intoxicated or not. With a breathalyzer or with a blood test of alcohol, an employer can say, yes, you were impaired on the job. A drug test for alcohol is a little less convincing because of the way alcohol is metabolized. But they have an immediate way to check if somebody is acutely intoxicated on alcohol in the workplace. If marijuana stays in your system and is fat soluble and released constantly, you're going to have some difficulty proving that you're not acutely intoxicated. And the government has stood on the side of the employers saying you can require your employees to be drug-free during work time. So other interesting ways in which people are going to struggle with these issues that seem a little bit further afield, whether it's banking, whether it's public safety, whether it's related to a drug-free workplace. All of these things are going to be on the horizon that we're going to have to take into consideration and we're going to have to deal with at some level. And there's a lot of money and a lot of influence and a lot of lobbying going on. A group of 150 people are headed to Washington, D.C. to lobby legislators to say to them, don't let the federal government interfere with our state's ability to choose medical marijuana or legalized marijuana. So it's not going away anytime soon, but I think it is a subject that we have to keep talking about because this is a scary, scary, scary thing and not going away anytime soon.
So happy Easter. Happy 420.
Happy 420, everybody. And I'm sure we'll see on the news people who are making their stand on 420. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This has been Detailing Addiction. We'll see you next week.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.